Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Welcome back, folks, and it is now or never. And, you know, there's still a lot of yammering about elections and the election process. Now, a long, long time ago, I had the reminiscence over the weekend with an old friend and recalled that at one point in time I was going to a friend's wedding, and this was the very early 2000s, and there was a young man, because he wasn't very well educated on civics, constitution, and so forth. He was basically younger than my children, but he was old enough to work. And so anyway, he just got out of the Marine Corps, and he said, "Hey, GR, what is America's greatest problem?" And at that point, I told him that our elections and election fraud is our greatest problem, election fraud and voter fraud. And that was because we were, you know, still, this is before Obamacare. This was, you know, just going down, you know, heading into the Patriot Act. And there, even though government usurpations and stuff have been really bad, the fact is we were now looking at a government that was already, because of motor voter laws, because of Clinton and the things of the 90s, that actually was opening America up to being able to be influenced voter-wise and election-wise to foreign entities. And the fact that we're so vulnerable to it today when we don't even have to be. So here's the dumbest question that nobody's asking that would put shine a light, literally a light, on the problem. Who has the authority to dictate how the elections are to be ran and how the money is to be spent? Who has that authority, folks? It ain't Congress. It is your state legislature. And who has the authority to start forcing the dialogue with your state legislature? Well, you can go into the courts, and as long as you're going into the courts, you're basically surrendering your sovereignty. But what you can do is you can go to your county commissioners, and you can demand your county commissioners seize full control of the election so that they actually have control over the election instead of allowing foreign entities, corporations like Dominion and so forth, to actually have control over our elections. This goes down this path, and I've said this before, and so forgive me for having to repeat this. But when we look at President's Day and Martin Luther King Jr.'s Day and Labor Day and Columbus Day as holidays, that's nice that we have a holiday. But the fact that we don't have a holiday for Election Day, that's unsat, because everybody cannot, we should not have any person, because we all have a right to vote. Everybody, every U.S. citizen, as long as you're registered and you meet the parameters legally to vote, then you have a right to vote. Okay, so what do we do then if, you know, people say they can't vote? Well, we need to eliminate as many of the hurdles that government possibly can. And government can easily do that by making that a state holiday, that no business or no person will work in the state until after they have voted that day, and that the polls and the elections will be open only one day. Now, look at this. We're going to basically cram, you know, one day of labor for people to volunteer to go and man the precincts the way we used to, that you go vote in person. And that, why is it that we can't do this? Oh, well, the reason why we're not doing this has more to do with the controlling of the outcome. If you actually have control over your own outcome, in other words, you get to count your own votes in your precinct, and you lock those things down and certify them, then they can't be manipulated. It's done. You have done it by hand. Folks, why is it that we're not doing this? And as a matter of fact, I would rather see the voting polls actually operate for 12, 24, 36, or 48 hours. There's no reason why every precinct can't come to a close within 48 hours and certify, and doing all of this in the open. In other words, we always have cameras, and if there's any camera whatsoever that goes out, or any kind of coverage that is unavailable, or any box shows up, all of a sudden we got a whole bunch of ballots. Anybody holding that box or bringing that box in is open to full investigation to ensure we're going to do fingerprints on the cards, fingerprints on everything. And we want to make sure that if this person has committed a crime, they will be held to the fullest of the law. They will lose their citizenship and they will go to jail. We need to be serious about our elections. And I think most everybody in America is getting pretty serious about this stuff. But why is it that we are still... We've seen voter shenanigans for decades. And this goes all the way back to Lyndon B. Johnson with Landslide Lyndon. Go look that up. I've said this before. Go look up what Landslide Lyndon refers to in how they stole that election so that he could become senator. Folks, we have the opportunity and responsibility to reel this in. All we need, anybody out there that wants to play in voter integrity and so forth, what's keeping you from writing a First Amendment petition that we could actually distribute throughout the Republic so that everybody could start demanding the exact same thing? Doing away with all of these state holidays and making Election Day a state holiday. Nobody works until they have voted. And maybe put a little ink on their hand or some indelible marks, you know, that won't wash off so they can't vote twice. This is the kind of stuff that we did when we guaranteed who was going to win in Iraq, remember? Or Afghanistan. Folks, we've applied logic and principles when we've actually conducted elections in other states to ensure a right and safe and secure outcome of the will of the people. But the globalists are the ones that are securing the outcome for America. And we've got to stop this. If you can't listen to the words of Madison and Jefferson as I read these things, because I know it's difficult and it's not easy to read. I struggle when I'm looking at these abbreviations such as WD and, you know, YR period. I mean, what the heck? Some of these things just don't make sense to me, but I at least get something out there, and we may be struggling here, and you would equally struggle, but understanding what these insights and what he's basically professing is so important, because this is how we get our arms around what we have to do to take back our government and end the multi-level tyranny that is being levied upon us. And in some ways, the tyranny that's being leveled upon us at the county level doesn't necessarily mean it's your county commissioner's fault. It is their fault if they don't understand what they're doing, but it may not be their fault if the state's mandating this crap. But they do have the ability to step up and start nullifying what the state is doing and saying, you don't have this authority. Educating. So actually, I didn't say anything in the last episode, but I will say this. We do have the video up on Reclaiming the Republic YouTube channel. We've still got that link, and I've got to work with my ISP in how I can get videos up onto my website without having to go through FTP. It literally dies on me after a couple of hours of trying to put the file up. So anyway, we got our problems. We need your help. We need your help in lots of ways. But let's start working smarter and not harder. Let's stop following the narrative and going into the little battlefields and the courtrooms that the progressives want us to go into, because they know they're going to get the outcome that they want. They can't control your First Amendment petitions. They can't control the direction and the ire of the people as it is directed very accurately and very well articulated in First Amendment petitions to your county and then eventually to your state legislators. So, folks, if you want to win, let's do things that make us win, or help us win, I should say. And so what we're going to do today, now that I've kind of gone through the rat hole of my monologue, we're going to give and wrap up on Madison's notes on nullification. So what I'm going to do is I will do that, and then I'll do a summary on what we have read and what we've covered from the resolutions of 1798 and 1799, and then Madison's notes on the resolutions, and then Madison's notes on nullification. So as we get ready, because we're basically out of time, we got about 20 seconds left. So one of the things I need to say that I haven't probably said all week is the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions as to what we need to do to reclaim our government at the local level and to reclaim our republic. And so with that, we're, like I said, we're going into this break. And then tomorrow, being Feedback Friday, we will kind of dive into some feedback with the little I've got so far. So you got questions, let me know, and we'll address those tomorrow. But anyway, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so where did we leave off? So we kind of left off with Madison basically going through the fact that one state cannot nullify a federal law while staying in the union. And so what I want to do is I want to go through these other highlights. So we're going to skip down to paragraph 49. And this is what it says. And actually, maybe what we need to do is, I was going to go look at 48. So 48, just to be clear, I'm going to read the last couple sentences from this. So far was the state from continencing the nullifying doctrine that the occasion was viewed as a proper one for exemplifying its devotion to public order and acquiescence in laws which it deemed unconstitutional whilst those laws were not constitutionally repealed. The language of the governor in a letter to a friend will best attest the principles of feelings which dictated the course pursued on the occasion. And so this was a letter from James Monroe to James Madison. This is what it says. It is sometimes asked in what mode the states could interpose in their collective character as parties to the Constitution against usurped powers. It was not necessary for the object of reasoning in the resolutions and report that the mode should be pointed out. It was sufficiently to show that the authority to interpose existed. Or hold on here. You know what? Have we read this? I just want to make sure that we have not read this. Okay. It was sufficient to show that the authority to interpose, so sometimes he repeats himself, so that's what throws me off, to interpose existed and was a resort beyond that of the Supreme Court of the United States or any authority derived from the Constitution. The authority being plenary, the mode was of its own choice, and is obvious that if employed by the states as co-parties to and the creators of the Constitution, it might either so explain the Constitution or so amend it as to provide a more satisfactory mode within the Constitution itself for guarding it against constructive or other violations. Now, we haven't finished all of this. It remains, however, for the nullifying expositors to specify the right and mode of interposition which the resolution meant to assign to the states individually. They cannot say it was a neutral right to resist intolerable oppression, for that was a right not less admitted by all that the collective right of the states as parties to the Constitution, the non-denial of which was urged as proof that it could not be meant by the resolution. They cannot say that the right was meant as a constitutional right to resist the constitutional authority, for that is a contradiction in terms as much as a legal right to resist a law. They can find no middle ground between natural and constitutional rights on which a right of nullifying interposition can be placed. And it is curious to observe the awkwardness of the attempt of the most ingenious advocates. Now we jump down to 64. And actually what we're going to do is we're going to jump to 61, because this is another insightful part where Madison references the Republican Party. It has been said or insinuated that the proceedings of Virginia in 1798 and 99 had not the influence ascribed to them in bringing about that event triumph result. In other words, getting rid of Adams and the Federalists. Whether the influence was or was not such as has been claimed for them is a question that does not affect the meaning and intention of the proceedings, but as a question of fact, the decision may be safely left to those recollection of those who were contemporary with the crisis and to the researches of those who were not taking for the guide and reception given to the proceedings by the Republican Party everywhere and the pains taken by it in nullifying republications of them in newspapers and in other forms. What the effect might have been if Virginia had remained patient and silent, and still more if she had sided with South Carolina in favor of the Alien and Sedition Acts, can be but a matter of conjecture. What would have been thought of her if she had recommended the nullifying project of South Carolina may be estimated by the reception given to it under factitious gloss, and in the midst of the peculiar excitement of the advantage has been taken by the partisans that an anomalous conceit. It has been sufficiently shown from the language of the report that it has been seen that the right in the states to interpose declarations and protests against unconstitutional acts of Congress had been denied, and that the reasoning in the resolutions was called for by that denial into the triumphant tone with which it is affirmed and reiterated that the resolutions must have been directed against what no one denied unless they were meant to assert the right of a single state to arrest and annul acts of the federal government, makes it proper to adduce that a proof of the fact that the declaratory right was denied, which, if it does not silence the advocate of nullification, must render their candid ear indignant at the repetition of the untruth. So, in other words, he's basically saying that going through the resolutions and everything else, that clearly interposition by the states was the only proper way, and that there was no declaration for a single state at all by Jefferson or him, no declaration that allowed the evidence, or I should say that allowed a state to move forward in trying to nullify a law of the Union while staying in the Union at that. Jumping down a little bit further, 72. The plain answer is that the remedy is the same under government of the United States as under all other governments established and organized on free principles. The first remedy is in the checks provided among the Constitution constituted authorities, I still struggled with it, sorry, that failing, the next is in the influence of the ballot boxes and hustings, that again failing, the appeal lies to the power that made the Constitution and can explain, amend, or remake it. So, should this resort also fail and power usurped be sustained in its oppressive exercise on a minority by a majority, the final course to be pursued by the minority must be a subject of calculation in which the degree of oppression, the means of resistance, and the consequences of its failure and consequences of excess must be the elements. Does not this view of the case equally belong to every one of the states, Virginia, for example? Should the constituted authorities of the state unite on usurping oppressive powers, should the constituent body fail to arrest the progress of evil through the elective process according to the forms of the Constitution, and should the authority which is above that of the Constitution, the majority of the people, inflexibly support the oppression inflicted on the minority, nothing would remain for the minority but to rally to its reserved rights, for every citizen has a reserved right as exemplified in declarations prefixed to the most of the constitutions, and to decide between acquiescence and resistance according to the calculation above stated. So what he's basically saying is that you can put off this government. I mean, there's no point in waging war as a state. If you're the only state in the Union that feels this way, then you can put off this government. But if you're not happy with the laws, but you know that you need to stay in the Union, then the only course is to basically work and convince the other states in educating them what they have to do. So, folks, you want to know what we have to do? We have to educate all of the states and your state legislators to understand what they have to do so that they can actually start moving forward in auditing in this Republic review process. Those who question the analogy in this respect between the two cases, however different they may be in some respects, must say, as some of them, with a boldness truly astonishing, do say that the Constitution of the United States, which as such and under that name was presented to and accepted by those who ratified it, which has been so deemed, so called by those living under it for nearly a half a century as such sworn to by every officer as well as federal, is yet no constitution, but a treaty, a league, or at most a confederacy among nations as independent and sovereign in relation to each other as before the charter was called itself a constitution was formed. In other words, basically going back to the charters and going back to the Articles of Confederation. What he just said there, folks, is so critical and so powerful, because he basically said that this Constitution is yet a treaty, and actually he refers to it at most a confederacy among nations as independent and sovereign in relation to each other as before the charter, or that what we call the Articles of Confederation. So when we come back after these two breaks, we're going to kind of wrap up, because we're right now on going into paragraph 76. And so there's a few more paragraphs to go through, and then we'll do a summary, and then we'll get into Republic Review. So hang on. We'll be done with this today. We'll be right back.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the final paragraph in this little segment of paragraphs we're reading, the same zealots must again say, as they do with a like boldness and incongruity, that the government of the United States, which has been so deemed and so called from its birth to the present time, which is organized in the regular forms of representative governments, and like them operates directly on the individuals represented, and whose laws are declared to be the supreme law of the land, with a physical force in the government for executing them, is yet no government, but a mere agency, a power of attorney. Now, he said this, I didn't. He actually called it a power of attorney revocable at the will of any of the parties granting it. Now, this is all, you know, killer stuff. If you understand what we just read here, this is all killer content, because he basically pointed out, you know, this whole, you know, power of attorney that I have been telling you, right? I mean, so it's not me, folks. This is what they said. Don't take my word for it. How dare you think that a person today has this type of clarity? They don't. It's only through reading this language and through reading these words of these men can we come to that clarity, and it can only be repeated by us. It's almost like the word of God. We can repeat it, but it is his word. And I believe that applies here, my friends, as well. That these words that these men were saying were those words that were inspired by him. I recognize it as that, can't you? And if you can, then you should understand the importance of taking the time to going through these documents. You know, we have an opportunity in just a little over a month of actually making a commitment for your New Year's resolution to say, I'm going to read these documents. May not be able to have the time to read the ratification debates, but you need to read these short documents and as many times as necessary so that you understand them. Don't let anybody pervert these things. As I have told you, I forget the gentleman's name that was the founder or one of the founders of the 10th Amendment Center, but it's easy to pervert these things. You actually have to read through these. My question is, and maybe the analysis would show, that maybe some of these organizations like the John Birch Society, the 10th Amendment Center, and others, maybe they didn't really read this. There was just something that jumped out at them, and without doing the due diligence, they just clung to these few words they found, and they go, this is it. This is the clarity we've been looking for, skipping past all of the actual relevance of what they were saying and how that one context is, or that one phrase is taken completely out of context, that a single state could nullify the laws. Does anybody have any inclination as to whether a single state, after reading all of this, whether a single state has the authority under the Constitution to nullify laws and stay in the Union? If this doesn't put asunder that concept and that perversion, then I don't know what does. And if you agree with me, then what we need to do is help the 10th Amendment Center. There's expletive words that I don't want to use, but undo themselves. They need to get their heads right. The John Birch Society, the same thing. You know, I don't make this stuff up, folks. So as we peruse down, now we're going down to paragraph 79. It is painful to be obliged to such sophism as that which this inference is assailed, because an unconstitutional law is no law. It is alleged that it may be constitutionally disobeyed by all who think it unconstitutional. The fallacy is so obvious that it can impose on none but the most biased or heedless observers. It makes no distinction where the distinction is obvious and the essential between the case of law confessedly unconstitutional and a case turning on a doubt and a divided opinion as to the meaning of the Constitution, on a question not whether the Constitution ought or ought not to be obeyed, but on the question, what is the Constitution? And it can be seriously and deliberately maintained that every individual on every subordinate authority or every party to the compact has a right to take for granted that is a construction of its infallible one, and that to act upon it against the construction of others, having an equal right to expound the instrument, nay, against the regular expositions of the constituted authorities with the tacit sanction of the community. Such a doctrine must be seen at once to be subversive of all constitutions, all laws, and all compacts. Wow. So he's really hitting them hard. And then he says, the provision made by a construction for its own... The provision made by a constitution for its own exposition, because it says C-O-N-S-T-N. Could that be construction? I think it's constitution. the provision made by a constitution for its own exposition through its own authorities and forms must prevail whilst the constitution is left to itself by those who made it, or unless cases arise which justify a resort to ultra-constitutional interpositions. That's where we are today. We need very significant and prodigious interpositions in getting the federal government into check, obliterating this fraudulent debt, obliterating the fraudulent powers and tyranny that they're waging upon the good free people of these good states, these sovereign states. Paragraph 80. The main pillar of nullification is the assumption that sovereignty is a unit at once indivisible and unalienable, that the states therefore individually retain it as they originally held it, and consequently that no portion of it can belong to the United States. But it is not the Constitution itself necessarily the offspring of sovereign authority. What but the highest political authority, a sovereign authority, could make such a constitution, a constitution which makes a government, which makes laws, laws, laws which operate like laws of all other governments by a penal and physical force on the individual subjects to the laws, and finally laws declared to be the supreme law of the land. Anything in the Constitution or laws of the individual state notwithstanding. And where does the sovereignty which makes such a constitution reside? It resides not in a single state, but in the people of each of the several states, uniting with those of the others in the express and solemn compact which forms the Constitution. To the extent of that compact or constitution, therefore, the people of the several states must be a sovereign as they are a united people. And then he goes on and on and on. And so the last couple of comments that I'm going to bring up is paragraph 90. There is one view on the subject which ought have its influence on those who espouse doctrines which strike at the authoritative origin and the efficacious operation of the government of the United States. The government of the United States, like all governments, free in their principles, rests on a compact not between the government and the parties who formed it and live under it, but among the parties themselves, and the strongest of governments are those in which the compacts were most fairly formed and faithfully executed or followed, right? So I'm going to repeat this. The government of the United States is like all governments, free in their principles, rests on a compact not between the government and the parties who formed it and live under it, but among the parties themselves. So in other words, this is the state's compact. It is theirs. The federal government has these authorities delegated to it by that compact, but the compact itself and the government itself is the parties. There is no, you know, co-ownership. There is no cooperation. The states are the authority. You hear me say this all the time. I didn't make it up. Madison clarified this, and so did the many of the framers who ratified or were involved in the ratification process. It starts really, I'll just say, oozing out, you know, as we listen to the voice rising up from the dust as we read these ratification debates. Jumping down to 34, I'm just going to highlight a little paragraph out of this, and it basically says, it becomes all, therefore, who are friends of a government based on free principles to reflect that by denying the possibility of a system partly federal and partly consolidated, and who would convert ours into one either wholly federal or wholly consolidated, in neither of all the forms have individual rights, public order, and external safety been all duly maintained. They aim a deadly blow. You know what? I need to reread this again when we come back, because you can see where he's going with this. And he is making it very clear why we do not want a federal system. We don't want a federation or a consolidated government. What we want is more of a confederacy and basically a state level of sovereignty over the compact and keeping the federal government in check. We'll be right back.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org. So you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so final segment, folks, as you can tell by that little reminder. Now, this is what Madison says, and this is really the closing comment, even though obviously, 94, the 94th paragraph is the last paragraph. There's actually another half a paragraph, but I'm just going to read this one excerpt out of this. It becomes all, therefore, who are friends of a government based on free principles to reflect that by denying the possibility of a system partly federal and partly consolidated, and who would convert ours into either wholly federal or wholly consolidated, in neither of which forms have individual rights, public order, and external safety been all duly maintained. They aim a deadly blow at the last hope of true liberty on the face of the earth. Do you understand what he just said? When we allow our government to become wholly federal or wholly consolidated, and I said, here's the thing. It's not. We still have a constitution that does not allow a wholly federal or wholly consolidated government to exist. They're operating this way, which is why they basically have taken away individual rights, public order, and external safety. This is why, to get those things back, we must get the federal government back into compliance and undo all of the things that it had no authority to do. That means we need to start sending shots across the bow throughout the world, that everybody has to understand that we actually have a constitution that keeps our federal government from doing the things that they've been doing with these governments, that these governments should have known well in advance that they were working with a government that didn't have the authority to create this debt, to create these agreements, and that we're done. We're no longer going to allow them and our government, these actors in our government, to continually sell us downriver. They didn't get to the final blow where they got the states to surrender their constitutional authority. This is why this is so important. This is what Madison also states after he just stated that. He says, it's enlightened Voltaires, and so, or Voltaires, and what does the Voltaires mean? So let me look it up so that we can have a good understanding, because I'm at a loss. So it's enlightened Voltaires must perceive the I don't know what Voltaires, I'll have to look it up, I'm sorry. It's enlightened Voltaires must perceive the necessity of each of modification of power, as will not only divide it between the whole and parts, but provide for occurring questions as well between the whole and the parts as between the parts themselves. A political system which does not contain an effective provision for a peaceable decision of all controversies arising within the government itself would be a government in name only. Such as a provision is obviously essential, and it is equally obvious that it cannot be either peaceably or effectively by making either part an authoritative umpire. The final appeal in such cases must be the authority of the whole, not to that of the parts separately and independently. So I'm going to actually continue this next sentence. This was the view taken on the subject whilst the Constitution was under the consideration of the people. See Federalist number, and he doesn't include it here. It was this view of which dedicated the clause declaring the Constitution and the laws of the U.S. should be the supreme law of the land, and anything in the Constitution or laws or of any of the states to the contrary notwithstanding. It was the same view which specially prohibited certain powers and acts to the states, among them any laws violating the obligation of contracts, on which dictated the appeal the provision in the Judicial Act passed by the first Congress under the Constitution. And it may be confidently foretold that notwithstanding the clouds which a patriotic jealousy or other causes have at times thrown on the subject, it is the view which will be permanently taken of it with a surprise hereafter that any other should ever have been contended for. In other words, this is the type of government we should have that is best for us, period. And if not, then freedom and liberties of the people will be crushed and destroyed. Folks, you really want to let these globalists win? You really want to let this move forward? Well, I hope not. And I hope you're willing to actually start committing to reading these things, because you're going to find that I'm not making up this bad English. I'm not making up this difficult read to listen to. What I am doing is I'm actually giving you his words to, for you to at least be motivated enough to go read these yourself, so that you read these and read these and read these, so that these things jump out at you, that you look at this Constitution as a power of attorney in the form of a compact. In other words, that compact being the parties are the states, that power of attorney created a grant of delegated powers, roles, responsibilities, and property, that the federal government would possess these and only these. It's a beautiful thing, folks. It's a beautiful thing that we have such a tight control over our federal government. Unfortunately, we've failed, and I think the biggest cause to our failure was that when new states came into the Union, they did not provide the ratification debates, so that the ratification debates were center in understanding this Constitution and understanding, one, the roles and responsibilities of the states. So with that, this, I think, puts to bed this concept that nullification is even a viable thing to talk about. See, I think it's important that we get to a point where we go, okay, a convention of states ruled out, completely ruled out, academically ruled out. It is not the appropriate vehicle. Boom. Let's just put that back, on the shelf, and what else can we do? Nullification. No, nullification is not appropriate. The only thing a nullification would do is it would drive all the states to actually leave the Union, and then what? Rewrite a constitution? It's equally dangerous. So put nullification up on the shelf. So what is it that we are to do? What is it that we have this power in our hands with this power of attorney? As Madison talks about, he talks about this concept of interposition. And he didn't talk about the modes. He clearly stated that those modes in this article, in this particular article, or I should say, in Madison's notes on nullification, he clearly stated that the mode was not provided for. And I believe that that was okay because they had to figure out what to do because they didn't have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. We have it now, folks. And as far as I'm concerned, it makes the mode and the direction very simple. So what we want to do was, and what I need to do is I kind of want to do this summary. So when we look at a macro view, we kind of covered Jefferson's resolutions. And I told you, what did he really do in these resolutions? Huh? You thinking about it? Okay, so those of you who said he audited the Constitution and the laws, he made a contrast and comparison between what the Constitution actually did, what laws were delegated to it, and looked at these laws and say, hold it, these laws aren't confined or within the laws that were delegated and granted. He went through painstaking review of both the Constitution and the laws and identified how they were violating each other. And then he basically said, okay, now that we've proven, we've audited the Constitution and these laws, and we can clearly find that these laws are unacceptable violations of the Constitution in all of these different ways, then we have to come together as states and figure out what we need to do by setting up committees of conference and correspondence. Then what did he do? He sent this thing out to everybody else, you know, to all the other states, specifically to all the other states, and invited them to join with Kentucky. So the next step was Virginia's resolutions in 1798 in December, 2 months later. And so what Virginia did was they basically answered to the call, and they said, we agree, we must arrest. I mean, they didn't have to audit the Constitution at that point. It had already been done. Now, if you ask me, I believe that they should have audited it. I think they should have gone through the process and said, we completely agree. And if they missed something, they should have added that. Or if they misstated something, they should have clarified that. I don't think it is right, and I don't think it is proper that every other state, when they come into this process of republic review, because that's what we're talking about, that every state just takes for granted that everything that other state said and did was accurate. So I believe that this forces the states in coming in as they start joining to create a consensus of what the real accurate truth is. What does the Constitution really say? Definitize it, and then definitize, you know, the amendments to the Constitution, and then verify all of the law of the land. Then you can start looking at the federal government and what it is exercising for roles, responsibilities, powers, and property, and then identify which of those fall outside these filters that the Constitution gives you. These are the delegated roles. These are the delegated powers, the delegated responsibilities, and the delegated properties. Those things that don't fall within those are to be identified as violations and placed into a pot or placed into a little hopper to be parsed later. And we'll get into all of this with Republic Review in our next episode. It'll probably be Monday because we'll probably be doing Feedback Friday. God bless. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.